Welcome to the Weekly Transit, a podcast exploring the intersection of Western astrology and Jungian psychology. Astrology is a language that communicates how the planets and stars influence life on Earth, while psychology helps us navigate both conscious and unconscious experiences. Together, these tools offer the potential for self-understanding, growth, and transformation. Join astrologer Scott Tajarian and me, psychotherapist Gabriella D'Urso, as we dive into the cosmic forecast each week.
Welcome to the Weekly Transit. This is the week of January 15th to the 21st. This week, we are going to be covering seven transits, which is highlighted by the transit that we've been talking a little bit about leading up to this week, the Sun and Pluto transiting into Aquarius. This is a big...
That's a big shift.
Big shift, big moment. So we'll get into that a little bit later. Before we talk about the Sun and Pluto in Aquarius, we've got five transits that are occurring leading up to that, but they also, a couple of them are happening sort of at the same time. Everything is kind of building up to this date, to January 20th.
We've been talking about January 20th for weeks.
Yes.
It's finally here.
For some reason, it feels like a big day to me. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't think anything bad or anything like that, but I think that there's going to be a shift in the energy. And we'll get into what I think that shift is going to be as we move forward. But the week begins with the Sun, the planet of light, life, and vitality, still transiting through the cardinal earth sign symbolized by the goat, Capricorn, forming a sextile with Neptune, the god of fresh water and the sea, the planet of illusion, deception, compassion, intuition, in the mutable water sign symbolized by the fish and ruled by Neptune, Pisces. Last week, we began the week with Mercury in Sagittarius squaring Neptune in Pisces. This week, we're talking about the Sun in Capricorn forming a sextile, which is a positive, powerful aspect or a positive, supportive aspect to Neptune. It's earth water. Earth gives water form. Water nurtures the earth. So last week, at the beginning of the week, we were talking about needing to have those honest conversations with yourself. Now that we've done that, the Sun is coming through Capricorn, which is earth, which is reality. Capricorn represents responsibility, hard work, achievement, authority, goals, ambitions, real estate. It represents government, all aspects of authority. So then aligning with Neptune and Pisces, in a sense, it's kind of like the flavor of the transit that we talked about last week with regards to Mars in Capricorn aligning with Saturn in Pisces.
Yeah, it's feeling familiar.
There's a lot of these transits. It's like music. Astrology is like music. You know, you hear one instrument play the melody, and then you hear a different instrument play the melody. If you're listening to an orchestra, a symphony, there's maybe the piano's playing the melody, and then it's the violins playing the melody, and then the flute is playing the melody. And you get all these different sort of experiences of the same sound. And that's sort of what happens here as all these different planets transit through Capricorn and Pisces aligning with each other.
Well, it reminds me of how when we learn, we need repetition. So I guess the planets and stars are just helping repeat themselves.
Yes.
So that we hopefully get what we need from these transits.
Yes, exactly. And so what do we need from this transit? First of all, this transit is occurring from Sunday to Wednesday, January 14th to the 17th, it makes an exact sextile on Monday, January 15th. What are we getting from this transit? What we're getting is clarity in terms of how we relate to authority, authority figures, how you relate to yourself as the authority within your own life, how you can also be introspective in understanding what authority means to you. Like when I think of Pisces and Neptune and Pisces, I think of the unconscious. And the unconscious is where we keep all of our psychological baggage, the guilt, the shame, the regret, the blame. So thinking of your psychological baggage, the guilt, the shame, the regret, the blame, are you blaming yourself for something because maybe an authority told you you were to blame way back when you were a child? Do you feel guilty about something because the authority got mad at you?
The authority being your parents or your first parents? Relationship with authority.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Parents and then later teachers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like parents set the tone.
Even older siblings, too.
Older siblings, sure.
Can be huge authority figures.
Exactly. So I feel like this transit is really helping us go within ourselves and become the authority.
Mm-hmm.
So like, how can you face the demons that are carrying your psychological baggage as the authority? So when you're thinking about yourself as a child being punished in some way by a parent, maybe, can you now step in as the adult in your mind and stand up for yourself?
Mm-hmm.
But it's also about holding yourself accountable, taking responsibility for maybe what you did do wrong, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And by taking responsibility, and you're also standing up for yourself. You're saying, okay, yes, I made a mistake then, but I don't need to be punished for the rest of my life mm-hmm. for that mistake.
So some of what might be going on during this transit is an invitation to reparent yourself.
Yes.
Working with this theme of the first authority figure or your parents.
Mm-hmm. Right on. Yes, exactly.
I think that's a really important developmental shift. Like when we get to the point where we stop blaming our parents,
mm-hmm.
when we start to see them as fellow flawed human beings.
Exactly.
And we recognize that there are ways that we've been wounded by them, consciously or unconsciously on their part.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a real opportunity to reparent ourselves and start to move past that story.
Yeah, so you can stop feeling like, stop blaming them for everything. It's also about blaming other people. When I say guilt, shame, regret, and blame, it's blaming your parents for all the problems in your life. At some point, as an adult, you have to say, okay, my parents, maybe they did a shitty job. Maybe that's the best that they could do. Obviously, I think they could have done better, but I'm not going to put everything that is happening in my life as an adult on them mm-hmm. anymore. At some point, I have to take responsibility for myself, because when you think about your parents, maybe like you're upset at your parents for not parenting you better. Were their parents like great parents? Probably not. You know, if you give your parents like 2 out of 5 stars, and you look at your parents' parents, do you think that they were 5 out of 5 stars? Like, they probably had a hard time growing up too.
Well, I think sometimes our parents, their parenting style, it's interesting to consider how that relates to the difference between the astrological charts in the family. Because a parent can be parenting in their own style based on who they are.
Mm-hmm.
And it may or may not be a match for that child. So exactly. It ends up wounding that child, because it's essentially kind of trying to program them in some way to be someone that they're not.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that is just the necessity that we have to experience the wound in our chart, to experience that Chiron placement, and so that we have something to heal from. So I would say we all have some wounding with our parents.
Exactly.
And it's sort of a, I guess, a bit of a paradox because, you know, in therapy, we talk a lot about, this is the foundation of like psychodynamic psychology, which is looking at the past to indicate how that's affected the present. And it might seem like we're blaming parents, but it can become really empowering once you understand what happened.
Hmm.
Can you make that connection from the past to the present? And then you get to take that into the future. You then take responsibility for changing the pattern. But before you can change the pattern, it is helpful to recognize where it came from.
Totally. Well, you have to know where the nature of the wound in order to heal from it, right?
That's like more of a philosophical question, but yes, yes and no. Yes and no.
Okay. So what can you articulate more clearly than if I'm not fully understanding like what you're saying? You're saying that you have to understand the wound. You have to recognize that the wound is there.
I think when it comes to our parents, it's helpful to understand the wound.
Yes.
I guess what I'm comparing it to would be like a Reiki session or a plant medicine ceremony. You're releasing a lot in those energetic exchanges that you might not really know what it is.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it depends on what kind of healing work you're doing, whether or not actually knowing what the wound is really matters. You could be healing things like in a plant medicine ceremony that are clearing out kind of old stuff from your unconscious, so it never really comes into your consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why you might not really know. You're like, wow, I feel a lot lighter, but I don't really know what it is that left. So it's not always necessary. But of course, in therapy, it's talk therapy, you're conscious, you're, mm-hmm. you know, it's a different way of relating to the material. But I did want to say what you were describing about the guilt, the shame, the regret, the blame living in your unconscious. I also want to, one thing that's really important to me to help share is this message that You don't only have negative qualities in your unconscious.
Mm-hmm.
You have anything in your unconscious is what you are simply unaware of.
Right.
So you can have suppressed qualities that are powerful and beautiful and brilliant.
Mm.
And so it's important, I think, to just shift that a little bit and recognize that there's more to the unconscious.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that's why we have dreams as well as nightmares.
Definitely.
Right? We can have like amazing fantasy dreams.
For sure.
And that's unconscious material.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the same way when you talk about like projecting onto someone else, you can project your quote negative qualities or your quote, I'm using air quotes,
mm-hmm.
Positive qualities onto other people too. So it's whatever you have repressed in yourself is going to go into your unconscious.
Yes.
And for some people, that might be the guilt, the shame, the regret, the blame. If you're someone historically who has a difficult time with those emotions, but some people are really in touch with guilt, shame, and blame and might be less in touch with like their more empowered selves or their brilliance, their intelligence, their beauty. So those qualities might be suppressed.
What I tend to find is like when planets are transiting through someone's 12th house or people that have multiple planets just in their natal chart in their 12th house, there is a lot of guilt, shame, regret, and blame. It doesn't mm-hmm. mean that there isn't something positive there as well, but there's just, it's almost like you have to get through all the muck
mm-hmm.
in order to reimagine who you are. It's like there's like this heaviness weighted in. It's like when a planet transits through the 12th house, what I find is with people that I work with, that they tend to have, and myself included, they tend to have a harder time mentally. It's like thoughts that are typically aren't there are suddenly coming up.
Mm-hmm.
It's like going from the unconscious to the conscious.
Mm-hmm.
And so I see it as being able to face that with love and understanding so you can forgive yourself is what supports you to reimagine the dream and have the fantasy and the optimistic side of the possibilities that exist beyond your conscious awareness.
You know, I think that you're right that that's the case for most people. And maybe it's a mix too. When you have these transits that are encouraging, you know, awareness of the unconscious, maybe it's a mix and there is some of the kind of the muck that comes up first.
Mm-hmm.
But I just want to, I guess I just bring that in and will continue to bring that in as a reminder because I don't think we're meant to fear the unconscious.
No. I'm not saying that. Do you think I'm saying that?
I don't think you're saying that verbatim, but the perception of it being only negative material, I think might perpetuate some fear in others.
I think I just look at it differently. I don't think about it as negative. I think about it as positive. It's good to face the darker. This is about facing your shadow.
Mm-hmm.
Facing the darker parts of yourself that you typically don't want to pay attention to. You know, you kind of brush it underneath the rug, but if you don't face it, then it starts to stink up the room. It's like a dead rat under the rug.
It does, but even that comment that you just made, a dead rat, is like a negative. What if it's a diamond under the rug? Well, it's like the point is there's something in your shadow that it's in your shadow because you've decided that it's not you.
Mm.
And that can be anything. That can be a diamond. That can be your soul's purpose. I mean, it can be an incredible gift. So we just don't know.
But my point is you have to pull up the rug to see what's there.
You do. You do. Absolutely.
And
you're going to find probably a little bit of everything.
Exactly. It's like if you dig through the couch cushions, you know, you might find some coins, but you might find, you know, some crumbs, a dead cockroach, like
no.
Who knows? Depends on how often you
for anyone listening, we do not have dead rats in our house. So Scott's taking it to a dark place.
Yes. I love it. The second transit of the week is Mercury, the messenger of the gods, guide of souls to the underworld, the planet of consciousness, communication, and coordination, transiting through Capricorn, aligning with Saturn, the god of wealth and time, the planet of restriction, responsibility, hard work, achievement, and authority, and the planetary ruler of Capricorn, but Saturn is transiting through Pisces. So this is the aspect that was occurring with Mars and Saturn last week. So last week we were talking about Mercury in Sagittarius aligning with Neptune in Pisces. This week we're talking about the Sun in Capricorn aligning with Neptune in Pisces. Last week we were talking about Mars in Capricorn aligning with Saturn in Pisces. This week it's Mercury in Capricorn aligning with Saturn in Pisces. This is one of those aspects with Mercury, since Mercury is now direct. It was retrograde. This is the third time in the last month and a half that Mercury is aligning with Saturn. This first happened on December 1st through the 4th. It happened again December 20th through the 22nd when Mercury was retrograde. And now it's back again, occurring from Tuesday to Friday, January 16th to the 19th. So this is the third look of this alignment. So think back to those dates. What was going on with you, especially with regards to your unconscious, your conscious awareness of your unconscious, what was like poking through, what was poking through the soil, sprouting up in terms of how to speak from that place of authority between December 1st through the 4th and December 20th to the 22nd. This is the third time. So this is giving you an opportunity to speak up from that place of authority, to have compassion for everything that's going on in your unconscious, whether it feels good or it doesn't feel good. It's about reimagining the dream of what it means to be an authority. You are being given a voice. How are you using your voice to speak up from that place of authority? The only person in the world that is you. So nobody else can tell you who you are except for yourself. So how can you speak up? Hold yourself accountable for the words that you're choosing. Appreciate the power of words.
The power of thoughts.
I was just going to say that.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm. I think part of what it means to be recognize yourself as an authority is to understand the way that every small choice that you make creates your daily experience. So even the decision to drink enough water, to eat certain foods, to dress a certain way, to listen to a certain kind of music, all of those are choices that affect your daily experience.
Mm.
And all of those are opportunities to nurture yourself, which is part of being an authority, taking care of yourself. The authority, you know, the government, for example, you mentioned is recognized as an authority figure, and they're supposed to be taking care of us,
mm-hmm.
right? Whether they are or not is, you know, for each of us to discern for ourselves, but taking care of yourself is an act of authority.
Mm. Yes. So take care of your thoughts, mm-hmm. take care of your words, and in doing so,
your belief systems.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
You will ascend to your goals. So when I think of belief systems, that is kind of like a Pisces energy because it's how you think about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So you clear out those negative thoughts, you forgive yourself, you replace them with positive affirmations
mm-hmm.
that will help you achieve your goals and ambitions.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you look at, just to go deeper into belief systems, most of us have belief systems from childhood, which again comes from our parents. And then when we grow up, we then base our beliefs off of what we see, typically what we see in the media,
mm-hmm.
which is monitored by the government.
Mm-hmm.
So allowing yourself to base belief systems off of like your firsthand experience and giving yourself permission to change those belief systems if you notice that they're not working for you.
Mm, yes.
Like if you have a belief system about something and you keep noticing that it shows up and in the universe and is affirming that belief that you have is correct, but it's not serving you, it's hurting you in some way, you can kind of reprogram your mind.
Totally.
Like we talk about being programmed, you know, by social media mm-hmm. or, you know, Hollywood. Like you have the ability to, like, quote, reprogram yourself in a healthy way. That's what hypnosis is.
Yes. I think of, you know, like sports to me are such a great metaphor for life, and they really give like a great example of these sort of like the hierarchy of how the mind works and authority and all this, everything that we're talking about here. It's like, I think about, you know, these football teams. They want to achieve a goal. They want to win the championship, whatever that means. And you often hear these coaches after a game where maybe, you know, as a viewer, you're watching the team that eventually wins and it doesn't look like they're going to win. They are making bad plays and they're turning the ball over to the other team or whatever is happening. But then they persevere, they come back, they win. And the coach, you know, the interviewer after the game is always like, you know, how'd you hold it together? And, you know, and we're able to, your team was able to respond and come back. The coach is like, we just believed in ourselves. We believe in each other. And, you know, yeah, the quarterback threw an interception, the running back fumbled the ball, but it happens. It's part of the game. You get back out there and you do better the next play. And just, you know, these great coaches have a very even keel sort of mentality that just resonates through the rest of the players. It's like that authority figure, the coach, sets the tone for the other players. And it's like I even saw before one of the college football playoff games, the quarterback for Michigan was meditating in the end zone before the game.
I love that.
Took off his shoes. They showed him, like, took off his shoes, sat down right under the goalpost and, like, crossed his legs. And like, they had asked him about that. And he said, you know, as a teenager in high school, he moved around schools a lot and was really depressed. And he said he just went on YouTube, like, how do I help myself with depression? And he learned how to meditate. And so it just gets him in the right frame of mind to calm himself before this big game where they were playing against, you know, against this other great team, Alabama, and, you know, in front of 100,000 people at the Rose Bowl and millions of people on TV or millions of people watching on TV. And this guy is, what, 21 years old? It's a lot of pressure to put on a guy. But he was very poised. He even, like, his very first play, he threw an interception and it got called not an interception, but you didn't see anyone overreact to the situation, and they ended up winning the game. And it was a very close game, very exciting game. So
that's a great example.
Yes.
I also think about why do placebos work? You know, they do these
belief.
Yeah, they do these trials where some participants get the actual medicine and some get a placebo, and the placebo works 9 times out of 10.
Yeah.
Don't quote me exactly with that statistic, but it's baffling how often the placebo works. And I mean, if that's not proof of that, then I don't know what is.
The power of the mind.
The power of the mind.
And so that's what this early part of this week is about, is with the sun and Mercury transiting through Capricorn, aligning with Neptune and Saturn in Pisces, it's strengthening your unconscious mind, giving you the belief that you need in order to put yourself in a position of power, in that position of authority that I can do whatever it is I set my mind to do.
Very powerful.
Yes. So continuing with our third transit, which is Venus, Lady Luck, the goddess of love and beauty, the planet of relationships, transiting through the mutable fire sign symbolized by the archer, Sagittarius, squaring stressful aspect, Neptune and Pisces. So this is exactly where Mercury was last week on Monday. This transit is happening from Wednesday to Sunday, January 17th to the 21st, and it occurs exact on Friday, January 19th. So this is about being honest and compassionate in your relationships, being honest about your likes and dislikes, your value, your senses, how you relate to the material realm. You know, how do I relate to the material realm that in a way that makes me feel free? And all of us have this sort of barometer, I imagine, that is based upon our self-worth, our values, our likes and dislikes. And when those are being met, we feel free.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wearing the clothes that I like. I'm eating the food that I want to eat.
I have the beliefs that I want to have.
And I feel seen and heard in my relationships.
Mm-hmm.
But the squaring of Neptune is bringing up maybe that shadow side of relationship. Maybe you're not getting what you want from a partner, and that's causing you to feel unseen.
Hmm.
There may be a lack of clarity in relationship. There may be confusion in relationship. It's like the more honest we can be with our partners, the more clarity that we'll receive. But it kind of gets into that touchy place where what is the line between being honest and clear and being hurtful? Because it's like sometimes maybe somebody needs to get burned in order to realize that they shouldn't be touching whatever they're touching.
Yeah, if you touched a hot stove, you'll probably never do it again.
Mm-hmm. So what's hot in your relationships? What has you sort of boiling in your relationships? As you are stepping into your power as the authority and you're restructuring your beliefs, you have to be clear and coherent in your relationships. It's like if I'm reimagining who I am as the authority, then the people that I'm in relationship need to relate to me differently than how they were relating to me before.
Hmm.
Which means you're not seeing me in the way that I need to be seen. So I have to make it more clear to you. But in order to make it more clear to you, how can I do that empathetically?
Mm-hmm.
Where I may be, okay, let me have this conversation with you. It's not easy for me to have because I might get frustrated. I don't want to get frustrated. So how can I say or express myself in the way that makes me feel truthful without being hurtful?
Mm-hmm.
And then allow you the space to do the same.
Yeah, I think that takes practice to learn how to communicate honestly in a way that also is gentle enough that it can be received.
And that's why we hit these points again and again. Like last week was about having that honest conversation with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Once you've had the honest conversation with yourself, now you can have the honest interaction in your relationships.
Well, it reminds me of that expression. I'm sure we've all been in an argument like this before, where one person says, "It's not what you said, it's how you said it."
Mm.
And there's so much truth to that. So some of this is maybe there's like the nuance of what you say and how you say it, because the delivery is a big part of the experience of communication.
Yes. I love that point. Your tone. What's your tone? Because the when tone. You think of the archer, it's the arrow. It's pretty sharp.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, how can you soften your approach or sugarcoat your approach a little bit so that the person that you're sharing your expression with is able to receive and digest what it is you're sharing with them? It's like putting some sugar on the medicine.
Mm-hmm. You could say the tone might be even more important than the words.
Totally.
Like I'm thinking about, for those of you who know about our dog, Maggie, you know, anytime you're communicating with an animal, you know, it doesn't matter what you say. If you're saying do, 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 you know, they're like, okay. Mm-hmm. You know, they're responding to your tone.
You're very sweet to Maggie.
I am very sweet to Maggie. Even if she's driving me crazy.
Yes.
I think I, for the most part, have a sweet tone with her.
Oh my God. I remember the first time I met you or I went over to your house. I was like, I've never heard anyone speak to their dog the way that you speak to your dog. Like you were talking to her like she was a person, but like a child, sort of.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very sweet.
Yeah. I love that you remember that story.
Oh, yeah. I remember it very clearly because it was shocking to me. Like, I'm used to hearing people like yell at their dogs and stuff. And like, get back over there. Get out of here. You know, you're like, no, you, sweet Maggie, we're going to put you over here now. Okay. You're going to, you're just, I was like, wow, that's interesting.
Well, I grew up with our family dogs were like family members.
Yes.
So that's one of my belief systems, I guess.
Right.
So it's very confusing for me when people treat their dogs differently.
Yeah.
But that's just a different way of relating.
Yes. Well, I mean, yeah, I think we were kind to our animals, but I don't know. It was, I know my dad really was very, very in tune with all of our animals. But yeah.
You had animals that lived outside, though, right?
Yeah, well, we'd bring them inside if it was really cold outside.
But they mostly lived outside.
Yes. That was another weird thing coming to Los Angeles and all these people that have their dogs, like, living in their house, sleeping in their beds. Like, that didn't make, like, when you grow up, I don't know, for me, like, growing up out in the country, the animals are outside and they just kind of fend for themselves. I mean, you feed them and you take care of them in that way, but you don't bring them in the house.
Mm-hmm.
When our cat got really old, we would let him be in the house more, Tigger. But, you know, and look, all of our animals like died young, horrible deaths too, except for Tigger was the one survivor, I think, because we were leaving them outside, you know? They either get killed by another animal or they're getting run over by a car or something like that, you know, is, yeah, very traumatic for me.
Very.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I appreciate the having the dogs inside. And
yeah. And Maggie's almost 16. So maybe there's something to.
Like in our neighborhood, the dogs and cats, they just ran wild all over the neighborhood. It was just, it was wild.
Anyway.
It's a tangent. Our fourth transit of the week, Mercury continuing through Capricorn, forms a trine supportive aspect with Jupiter, the god of thunder, lord of justice, the planet of luck and expansion in the fixed earth sign symbolized by the bull, Taurus. This transit is occurring concurrently the same time as Venus in Sagittarius, squaring Neptune in Pisces from January 17th to the 21st, Wednesday to Sunday, with the exact trine occurring on Friday, January 19th, just as Venus and Neptune are aligning in an exact square.
Hmm.
A lot of powerful energy coming about here as we're moving towards the sun moving into Aquarius with Pluto. This, like we talked about Mercury previously aligning with Pisces, this is the third time in the last month and a half that Mercury has met up with Jupiter.
Hmm.
The first time was December 6th to the 9th when Jupiter was retrograde, Mercury was direct. The second time was December 16th to the 20th when Mercury was retrograde, but Jupiter was direct. And now January 17th to the 21st, Jupiter and Mercury are both direct. So the first time Jupiter was retrograde, the second time Mercury was retrograde, the third time neither planets are retrograde. They're both direct.
So things are starting to move forward.
Things are starting to move forward. This is the third time we're getting this transit. So this is like the third and final lesson. This is why I bring up these dates. So if you can think back to what was going on with you, December 6th through the 9th or December 16th to the 20th, this is a revisitation of this energy. And the energy is about connecting your conscious awareness to your values, your belief systems. The values are Taurus. The belief system is Jupiter. And then your goals and ambitions. That is Capricorn. The mental awareness is Mercury. So you bring that all together. You think about, what are my goals and ambitions? What are they based upon? They're based upon my values. What are my values based upon? My belief system.
Hmm.
My beliefs are the foundation of my values. My values are the foundation of my mental process. And my mental process is directed towards achievement, which is based on my beliefs and values.
I have an interesting story to share.
Please share your interesting story.
About belief systems.
Yes.
So when I was studying to write my thesis, mm-hmm. which I ended up switching topics. So before I landed on the topic that I did write about, which is the intersection of astrology and psychology, I kind of went down this rabbit hole for a while. I was researching near-death experiences, as I'm really interested in the death process and in the afterlife. I studied as an end-of-life doula. I grew up in a house next to a graveyard, literally out my bedroom window. Yeah. So it's just always been a fascination for me and just a really kind of natural curiosity. And I grew up in a house that was very active energetically with spirits.
Yes, like I've been to your childhood home and been to the cemetery next to your home. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting is many of the people that were buried in the cemetery next to your home built and lived in your home. It was a tavern.
Yeah, it was.
It was built in the 1800s.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a tavern and an inn, basically.
It was a bed and breakfast.
Bed and breakfast.
Yeah. Yes. And
so these entities, or you know, maybe your next door neighbors that used to live in the house were coming into the house and
yeah.
disturbing your child mind and awareness.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, the house too. So now it's part of the Historical Society of Vermont. The house is in Vermont. And it was also rumored to be part of the Underground Railroad, which was a movement that helped enslaved people escape to Canada.
Hmm.
So there's a lot going on in that house. And I was privy to a lot of that energetically. So I really feel like, anyway, my relationship with the world of the unseen, it was almost like an initiation into that from living in that house. So when it came time to do some research on the topic of near-death experiences, I had a friend about a year ago who had a near-death experience. And in my process of trying to support him, I became curious about researching just more about, like, what do we know about what happens? And I ended up not going too far down that path because it was actually quite activating for me and I needed to change my topic to get the thesis done and to graduate. But what I learned is I found this amazing research around how near-death experiences vary from culture to culture, and how if you have a belief system, like if you believe that your ancestors meet you when you die,
mm-hmm.
the people who believed that had those experiences.
Mm.
The people who believed that their culture believed that animals greet you when you die had those experiences.
Mm.
And of course, these are all people who died and came back,
of course,
who were able to describe this.
Mm-hmm.
But the research looked at like different religious backgrounds and belief systems around the afterlife. And that is literally what happened to these individuals, which blows my mind.
Totally.
So we spend so much time talking about how we need to take unconscious material and bring it into conscious awareness, but it's also a loop. So what you're conscious of, you are bringing into your unconscious as well. You're literally,
totally.
You're literally creating your reality of like your own death. And when you think about, you know, psychedelic experiences too, you know, there's so much fear around what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's kind of up to you. What's going to happen is up to you to a degree.
It's so interesting you bring this up because it makes me think of like when I was a kid, I used to go skiing a lot. And on the days that I would go skiing, on those nights, I'd dream about going skiing. I would be like on the slopes, you know, it would be just so vivid. Or, you know, I've had those other experiences too. Like if I'm in times of my life where I've been like addicted to video games and I'm just playing video games like crazy, like you go to sleep and you're seeing the video game. It's bringing that conscious to the unconscious. right?
Absolutely.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So
it's a cycle.
Mm-hmm. So in thinking about this transit here with Mercury in Capricorn, trine Jupiter in Taurus, how do you tie that into the beliefs? And
I think it's just, I would say it's just a time to be aware of the power of your beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
And to be willing to work with them. If you notice that your beliefs are getting in the way for you somehow.
Yeah, I would think that now would be a good time to ask yourself the question, what does my reality look like?
Yeah, and do I like my reality?
And do I like my reality?
Mm-hmm. And how much of it is...
And what do I need to change about my reality to make it more pleasant to myself? To make me feel more empowered?
Absolutely. Yeah, and if you're... you know, playing video games or you're watching movies or with content that you're then bringing into your unconscious and it's affecting your life in a way that's harmful, it's maybe time to make a change.
So that leads us to our fifth transit, which is the sun again in Capricorn, squaring the moon in Aries, the moon, the planet of emotions. Aries, the cardinal fire sign, symbolized by the ram. We talked 2 weeks ago about the sun squaring the moon when the moon was in Libra and the sun was in Capricorn.
Mm-hmm.
Then the new moon happened last week. This week is the waxing half moon. 2 weeks ago was the waning half moon. The moon was getting smaller and smaller until it disappears from our sight because it's the new moon, and now it's getting bigger and bigger. This happens Wednesday at 7:52 p.m. Pacific time, Wednesday, January 17th. So be mindful, because I know you said last time that you feel the tension of the half moon. Wednesday, January 17th, there could be tension around emotions, because there is this struggle going on between your identity, which is wanting to be responsible in ascending towards goals and ambitions, but the Aries nature of the moon is impatient. Maybe doesn't want to do the work. It just wants
the results.
The results now. And if you're not getting the results that you want now, there may be an emotional outburst. So think about, what were the intentions that you set during the new moon in Capricorn last week with regards to responsibility, accountability, work, goals, ambitions, which was, interestingly enough, squaring the North Node in Aries. Now the moon has moved from Capricorn to Aries and is squaring the sun in Capricorn. So when we're thinking about the energy of the week, and much of it is in this Capricorn frequency of authority, responsibility, but then it's pushing up against the moon, the planet of emotions, in Aries, which is wanting to rush things, wanting to hurry things. And there may be, you know, with this moon squaring the sun, a proclivity to trip over ourselves potentially and in rushing up to the top of the mountain, and maybe we end up falling down a couple ledges because we're trying to rush.
So what do you recommend?
Well, I recommend being aware of your emotional well-being on Wednesday. And if there are any sort of feelings coming up that are aggravating, where are these rooted from? Where do these stem from? You know, this is still occurring. This is Wednesday. This is happening the same time that Mercury is forming a sextile with Saturn. So it's taking taking responsibility for the thoughts that are going on within you. So maybe the emotions are coming up to bring something up to the surface. So be aware.
Notice what that is.
Where does it come from? Why am I reacting emotionally? Why am I getting heated? Where is this agitation stemming from?
Well, and you said that that Venus is involved too. So what's coming up for you when something gets triggered in relationship, there's always a part of it that's about you.
Yes.
Usually.
Yes, totally. Because you're reflecting the partner.
Mm-hmm.
This leads us to the culminating transit of the week, though there is one transit that's happening. You know, this is happening the same day. Both these transits. So let's talk about them all at once. This is the 6th and 7th transits. The 6th being the sun transiting into Aquarius the same time as Pluto, the god of death, lord of the underworld, the planet of transformation, into the fixed air sign symbolized by the water bearer, Aquarius. This is happening the same day that Mercury moves out of its retrograde shadow. So let's just touch upon that. Mercury moved into its retrograde shadow November 25th. It began its retrograde December 13th. Retrograde ended January 1st. And now Mercury moves out of its retrograde shadow January 20th, which is Saturday. So Mercury is exactly where it was on December 13th. What was going on in your life on December 13th? Now it's time to revisit that frequency, stand in that position of power, acceptance of self, authority, take responsibility for your words, how you're communicating, what you're saying. When you're in that position of authority from a mental aspect too, you have the ability to listen to others. You don't feel threatened. It's like I'm the authority. So the king, a good king, a benevolent king, a person that's in a position of power that is truly confident in themselves is going to be able to listen to what others have to share with them.
That makes sense.
And that's a really important key when you think about Aquarius and the sun and Pluto transiting into Aquarius together. So these two planets begin forming their conjunction with each other in Capricorn, which begins on Thursday, January 18th. And the conjunction continues until Tuesday, January 23rd. So we're talking about when they both move into Aquarius on Saturday, January 20th. But they're already vibing off of each other. We're going through this transformation of ourselves as the authority. And we need to do this before we step into the Aquarius energy, because Aquarius is symbolized by the water bearer. The water bearer is that individual that lived a long, 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 long time ago in a village so primitive that everyone in the village went down to the stream each and every day, multiple times a day, to drink water and bathe like an animal. Until one night, sitting around the campfire, the water bearer said, "I have an idea. I'm going to figure out how to bring water from the stream to the village." And all the villagers kind of paused, looked at each other, and then bursted out laughing because the water bearer sounded crazy. They have this the energy of the water bearer is inventive. It's thinking outside the box. It's coming up with ideas that no one else has come up with before. And then the water bearer went to work and brought their crazy idea into reality, and many moons later showed up in the village with a jug full of water. And all the villagers who called the water bearer crazy were now saying they're a genius. So Aquarius is about the community, the group, the club, the organization, the social network, the social cause. When you are the water bearer, is somebody who was able to come up with that idea and do the work required to bring that idea into reality because they understood themselves. They held themselves accountable. They understood who they were, and it didn't matter what other people thought of them. They had clarity. They were in authority over themselves. And it's like, these people think I'm crazy. That's fine. Doesn't matter. They just don't understand what I understand. It's like I heard Jeff Bezos talk about how people thought he was crazy when he was explaining what Amazon was before.
Is he an Aquarius?
I think he's an Aquarius moon. I'm not sure. We don't have his birth time. But, you know, it must be he has 11 house placements. I don't know. We need it. Jeff, can you get us your birth time? we want to do your chart. So this is about when you think of Aquarius. Aquarius is ruled by Saturn and Uranus. Uranus is that outside the box energy, the planet of revolution, rebellion, innovation, independence, the unexpected. It's also ruled by Saturn. So Saturn rules Capricorn, but Saturn also rules Aquarius. Saturn ruling Capricorn is taking responsibility for myself. Saturn ruling Aquarius is holding myself accountable for what I'm responsible for within the group dynamic. Mm-hmm. So in order to hold yourself accountable for whatever it is you are needing to be responsible for in the group dynamic, you need to be able to be clear about who you are, mm-hmm. so that you can approach from that place of authority that I've got an idea. Maybe you don't understand it, but I think there's value to it. And I want to cultivate this idea to help the community, to progress society into a world where we can all be more independent, because that's why the water bear created the jug in the first place. It wasn't so that they could just use it for themselves. They did it for the community, mm-hmm. so that everyone could be more independent. So only a few people had to go down to the stream each and every day to collect the water, while everyone else could stay in the village and work on their own inventions.
Well, this is what I appreciate about this Aquarius energy so much, is there's just a lot of, for me, a lot of confidence there. You know, people are looking at you and thinking your idea is ridiculous or crazy in some way, and to have the confidence to do it anyway is kind of amazing.
Yes.
And I think maybe we can attribute that to the fact that Aquarius is a fixed sign. So there's a certain amount of like digging your heels in if you have this Aquarius energy, where,
and that's what Aquarius rules.
Oh, you know, like the heels.
The Achilles, the
yeah,
ankles.
That's yeah. right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So being willing to face, you know, some sort of backlash from the community.
Yeah.
But, and also just appreciating diversity, I think, is a real value of Aquarius.
Absolutely.
Instead of, Aquarius wants a community where each individual member is uniquely themselves. They don't want the kind of community where everyone is the same. Mm-hmm. And that's really a shift that I think we're still coming around to, as we've had, you know, these movements in the last few years that are really forcing us to reckon with maybe our issues with diversity. Mm-hmm. And as we move into the age of Aquarius, whenever that happens, I know there's some controversy about whether that's already happened or is it happening, but I think that consciousness is starting to come in. We need people in the community who are different so that we're not all, you know, in the orchestra playing the same note. That's not interesting.
As far as like the age of Aquarius goes, I think we're still in the age of Pisces, but regardless of that, Pluto transiting into Aquarius is ushering in this powerful Aquarius energy, which mm-hmm. Pluto's going to be in Aquarius until September 1st. Then it retrogrades back into Capricorn, and it's in Capricorn for 2 months, and then it moves into Aquarius again early November of this year, and it's there for the next 20 years. Mm-hmm. So over this 20-year period, there is going to be a radical revolution. What that means is up to us, mm-hmm. but it can mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people. It all depends on how you're working with the energy. But like when you think historically, the American Revolution ended during Pluto's last transit through Aquarius, and the French Revolution occurred during Pluto's transit through Aquarius. And there were dozens and dozens and dozens of other revolts and revolutions, but that doesn't even take into account the different inventions that came up during mm-hmm. the Aquarius energy. Mm-hmm. So we're going to see a revolution of technology during this 20-year period. It's like, I really feel like we're going to go from the light bulb to the iPhone in the next 20 years.
Well, and we're already starting to see that with AI. And totally. This is maybe an example of how we can relate to the story of the water bearer. I mean, there are people who think that AI, artificial intelligence, is crazy.
Yes.
And uncomfortable. Yes. And disturbing and want nothing to do with it. And there are people, you know, who are more kind of into it, the early adopters. Maybe they're the ones with the more Aquarius in their chart.
Maybe.
But there's, yeah, kind of an interesting, maybe that's an interesting way to think about what would that feel like, because mm-hmm. that is starting to happen here.
Yes.
With us. And with any new invention or with any new sort of consciousness that comes in, there is some uncertainty.
Mm-hmm.
There's an element of surprise. There's something to be discovered.
Yes, totally.
And that's that Uranus part of Uranus is one of the rulers of Aquarius.
Yes. Yes. Exactly.
So it can bring up fear for people.
It brings up fear.
Because we don't understand.
It's out of the blue.
When you already see like the media sort of like piggybacking off of that, and there are all these movies. Yeah, there are all these movies now around, you know, AI, the shadow side of it. And of course there is a shadow side of it, you know, that it's going to take over and it's replacing human beings and, you know, it's a total spiral.
Mm-hmm.
But it's playing on sort of the light and shadow part of these changes.
There's going to be some amazing inventions that are going to solve a lot of problems, and they're going to create new
other problems.
I mean, that's how it goes. Like, and there's always going to be that resistance. Like, I think about my parents that were raised in the 1950s. It's like my dad's family was the last family on the block to buy a TV.
Mm, scandalous.
And my mom's family was the first family to buy a TV.
Hmm.
So, you know, it's just interesting how, you know, one family was like, oh, this cool new technology, let's bring it in. And the other family is like, we don't want anything to do with that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, whether you want to resist AI or not, it's coming. It's here.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the sooner you can learn how to work with the energy and how to use it to benefit yourself and those within the community, the better. It's important for each individual. This, like, I just love this week, because this week is about getting clear about who you are internally, externally. What are you working towards? Who am I as the authority? And it's setting us up for our role within the community.
Mm-hmm.
Who are you? What are you bringing to the table? What are you bringing to the potluck? Remember, if everybody brings green beans to the potluck, it's going to suck. It's not going to be a good potluck.
Yeah.
So you want everybody to bring their individual gifts. So how can you, when we're standing in that position of authority, we can appreciate other people for their differences.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter that your beliefs are different than my beliefs or your values are different than my values. If we respect one another, then we can help one another progress society, progress the community into a future where we feel more balance and harmony.
Mm-hmm.
That's really what Aquarius wants. It wants balance and harmony. You know, the water bearer wants to help the village. Now, I think it's important for us to all remember that even though there's this talk about going to Mars and all this stuff, and maybe that's something that happens in the next 20 years. But in my mind, we're all stuck here. This is, you know, to go to Mars and colonize Mars, that's like the craziest, like, fish out of water story I've ever heard. Like, you think Mercury retrograde is nutty for you here on Earth. Like, try doing it off planet.
So, no thanks.
So I think the sooner that we accept and appreciate that we're all stuck here, because this is where we're all from and this is where we will die, the sooner that we can live together in greater harmony, that there is no answer out there. The answer is in here within ourselves and on this planet. So how do we work together? Now, there is like the shadow side of Aquarius, which, you know, people jokingly say that Aquariuses love humanity but hate humans because they're very detached. And that's where the kind of, you can go out there and be unique and different from everyone else and not care what they think because you don't have an emotional connection to them. You're like, okay, well, whatever. They feel this way about me. That's fine.
I have an Aquarius friend who doesn't like the word detached being used. He doesn't feel like that's accurate.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry, Gabriella's Aquarius friend.
Maybe another word. I just want to offer another perspective.
Yes.
I think of Aquarius sometimes as like you're really zoomed out.
Well, what?
So okay. It's like you're up in an airplane and you're seeing the big picture from up there.
Okay.
So you have a separation, but detached, maybe it has a negative connotation for some. I know that's not how you mean it.
Well, this is how I think about it. Detached to me means detached from the emotions. And Aquarius is detached from the emotions. It doesn't mean that if you're an Aquarius, you are detached from your emotions because your moon may be in Cancer. And so you feel a lot, or you may be a Cancer rising. But when I'm talking about the energy of Aquarius in and of itself, it is a detached, unemotional sign, detached from the emotions. Very logical. That is the light side of Aquarius. The Aquarius energy is about using logic, detaching yourself from the emotions and honing in on the facts. It's not about what I feel. I'm detaching myself from that feeling and I'm focusing in on the facts, on what is logical. So I don't mean to say that Aquariuses, people that were born with the sun in Aquarius, are detached. What I do say is that the sign, the energy of the sign, is detached emotionally. Of course, when you're looking at someone's chart, Aquariuses can be very emotional. It depends on what else is going on in the chart. I never like to pigeonhole people. We are all going to experience that feeling of not feeling. Like when you think about what was occurring during the French Revolution, like just vile, heinous acts of violence.
Which is what's going on now.
Devoid of feeling. Well. But I mean like decapitating people in the town square in a guillotine and then celebrating, holding up the heads in front of the crowd. Like that is cold.
Well, there are people who are celebrating what's going on, right? The violence that's happening right now as well.
And so there may be more of that.
In some ways, we think we've evolved, but in other ways, we haven't.
So there may be more of that coming. I don't know. That's the shadow side, because the shadow side of Aquarius is like, you didn't bring green beans to the potluck? Then off with your head. Or you're not invited here then. The only people that are invited to the potluck are the ones that bring green beans. This is a green bean potluck. And if you're not bringing green beans to our potluck, then you're not allowed here. That's the shadow side of Aquarius, where the differences of people aren't celebrated. They are punished for being different. And so we have to be careful of that during this period. Where are we pigeonholing people? Are we putting people in boxes and saying that if you're in this box and not in that box, then you're not allowed here? Or worse yet, I will commit an act of violence towards you because you're not in my box. Or because you're in my box, but you're different from me and I want you out of my box.
Those are all really important things to reflect on.
Yes. So there's a lot of celebration around the Aquarius energy. Yeah. You know? And there is, with the light side, very positive, but you got to remember the shadow side too.
Absolutely.
So the sun is in Aquarius for the next 30 days from now until February 18th. So from January 20th to February 18th, the sun transits through Aquarius. This could be a very challenging period for those that were born with key astrological points or planets in Taurus and Scorpio. Taurus is fixed earth, Scorpio is fixed water, Aquarius is fixed air. So they're fixed, they make a strong aspect with each other, but air doesn't mix with earth and water. So like when you think of Scorpio It's the deepest, darkest, most passionate sign. It's a sign that is not thinking, is not being logical. It's acting based on passion. So this Aquarius energy can be somewhat debilitating for those with key points or planets in Scorpio. And then the Taurus energy is wanting to just ground down in reality. And it's hard to do that when things are changing so quickly with this Uranus energy, which is transiting through Taurus and creating that tension in Taurus. This is why it's been a very unsettling time in terms of the material, our self-worth, our values since 2019.
So you're going to have a great month as a Scorpio sun and a Taurus always, rising.
Always. Yeah, I love it. And so will you, my Scorpio, Pluto, Venus partner.
I'll be up on the airplane, detached from...
You will?
Yeah.
Yeah, when the sun is squaring your Pluto and your Venus.
Oh, goodness.
Good times.
Yes.
So much fun to be had. I don't know. I'm excited. I'm excited for it regardless. And I also have a lot of planets in air and fire.
Mm-hmm.
Which vibe well. So if you have key points or planets in Aries or Leo or Sagittarius, Gemini, Libra or Aquarius, it's going to be positive. So if you're curious to know how these energies are affecting you directly, I encourage you to contact me for a reading at theweeklytransit.com. We'll look at your chart. We'll see what planets are in Scorpio or Taurus or air and fire, when those are happening, how to work with the energy, what it means. I also really want to encourage anyone who's already had a reading with me that wants to get deeper into their astrological code, that is looking for a guide to support them weekly, bi-weekly, or monthly, to contact me about the Cosmic Pathway, which is a program that I have where we are working with each other either weekly, bi-weekly, or monthly. And when I work with a client over time, we can get a lot deeper. And that's where you really see the changes start to occur in your life.
It's helping you integrate the knowledge.
Yes. Like, so true.
Like when you have a huge download in an astrology reading, it's kind of like having a plant medicine experience.
Yes. I love that you say that.
And then you're sent back out kind of on your own. And, you know, they say this in the plant medicine world that like the ceremony itself is like 20% of the work, and the other 80% is the integration, like what you do in the weeks and months afterwards when you when you're challenged, like you've learned the lesson in sort of this like abstract, you know, space, but when you actually need to integrate into reality and make different choices, that's where the rubber hits the road. So that's how I think about the Cosmic Pathway. Is it supporting you in like getting into the nitty gritty, the details, and actually integrating that knowledge, making it more practical?
It's the integration of the reading.
It is.
I love that you bring that up. You know, people go out there in the world. I've had clients tell me before, it's like after a reading, like I feel like I've just did drugs.
Yeah.
Because a complete stranger is telling them something about themselves that only they know.
It's a total high.
And so they feel validated and seen. And then they go out into the world and they hear about Ophir Eucis. And then they hear about, you know, an astrophysicist talking about how you're not really a Libra, you're actually a Scorpio. And everything that I shared with them becomes devalued. And they stop to really feel the experience and the power of the experience that they had with me. Mm-hmm. Just like somebody who maybe does a plant medicine ceremony and then goes out into the world and other people are sort of poo-pooing the plant medicine experience.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's like when I've done plant medicine before, like the shaman, the first time I did ayahuasca was like, don't talk to anyone about this outside of this circle.
Because it affects the experience.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they say that too with holotropic breathwork.
Yes. So if you want to get deep, then contact me for the Cosmic Pathway. If you want to integrate the work that we've already begun, as someone who has done a reading or two with me, then reach out about the Cosmic Pathway, and I will support you as you integrate the experience of what you've already learned from me in your daily life. Mm-hmm. And it's my greatest joy to work with people on a consistent basis, because then I get to really see the transformation that occurs in them.
This is where you really shine. Yes. Because your North Node is in Scorpio.
Yes.
So you want to go deep with people, and you really have an incredible capacity to be able to do that.
Yes. Thank you.
Yeah. You have clients you've been working with for years,
mm-hmm.
weekly clients.
Yes.
And they've gone through incredible life transformations.
Absolutely.
Found relationships, gotten married, moved, started businesses,
yep.
new jobs. I mean, like the big stuff.
Exactly. And that's what I do.
Yeah. And I will say too, like, that's the value of therapy too.
Yes.
Like that you're integrating.
Yes.
It's like you can't go to a yoga class once a year and then try to do a back bend by yourself. It's probably not going to go well.
No. Yes. You don't work out once a year.
Yeah.
It's a practice.
Well, I guess some people do right after New Year's.
Yeah, exactly. Their New Year's resolution. And then, so that's why I'm bringing this up now, like the third week in January, because people set their resolutions and then this is where they start to fall off. You know, it's typically, it seems to happen, you know, after the first lunar cycle. And mm-hmm. so we're three quarters of the way, or actually we're a quarter of the way through the new lunar cycle. You know, are you going to make it through the next three quarters?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'd be interested to know too, like the goals that people are setting.
Mm. And are they alignment with their North Node?
Are they really in alignment with you, or are you sort of cherry picking, you know, what you think looks good?
Yes.
Or what you should be doing.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yes.
Lots to think about.
Well, thank you, Gabriella.
Thank you, Scott.
You're welcome. That's it for this week. I thank you all for listening, for all of your support and encouragement. I want to thank everyone who's commenting and sending us positive vibes and writing questions, mm-hmm. and especially all of our sponsors on Spotify who are supporting this podcast monetarily. I want to thank you for all of your support and encouragement, and everyone who's sharing this podcast. It really means a lot to us. We enjoy doing this and sharing the knowledge, and we're grateful to know that what we're sharing here is supporting you each and every week. So until next week, all the best.
All the best.
Thank you for listening to the Weekly Transit. If you're curious to learn how these transits or any others may be affecting you, or if you're interested in learning more about your astrological code, contact me for a reading at theweeklytransit.com. If you're interested in delving into the world of psychotherapy with Gabriella, you can contact her at innervisionpsychotherapy.com. This episode was produced by me, Scott Tajarian. Music written by Ben Lineback from Listen Deep by Amber Herzog Lyman. Wishing you all the best as you ride the planetary waves.